It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Greece may be closing in on an agreement with its creditors, an anonymous European source saying early Monday. The French news agency quoting the source is saying the compromise agreement has been hashed out between Greece, Germany, France, and the head of the European Council. The Finnish finance minister, Alexander Stubb, said earlier Sunday Greece still had some work ahead of an agreement.
And now when you look at an image of Pluto, you see a real planet there. You see a complex world that just...
That was obviously not Mr. Stubb. The Finnish minister went on to say that Greece apparently had quite a bit of work as far as confirming the agreement and making sure that it would hold up its end of the bargain if an agreement is reached. Meantime, before the deal can be sealed, the leaders of the European bloc also would have to approve the latest proposal of the Greek bailout. Marathon negotiations toward an Iran nuclear agreement continued into the night Sunday. Iran and the U.S. and European diplomats working to resolve what one U.S. official described as major issues. Speaking on Fox News Sunday, U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell expressed concerns about an agreement should one be reached.
I think it's a document that has far-reaching conditionality on three accounts. Number one,
the administration chose to go down this path. We're going to be interested in things like, will the Iranians reveal their past research and development? What have they done in the past on this subject? Is it verifiable? Will we be able to look at all of their military bases?
Both sides were reported to be split over a UN arms embargo, which Western powers want to keep in place. This is VOA News. Burundi is postponing its presidential election for nearly a week after United Nations and the African officials warned the vote could spark more violence in the already tense country. Burundi's president has rescheduled the vote from July 15th to July 21st. The president's decision to seek a third five-year term sparked a failed coup back in May and weeks of violent protests. Critics say his re-election bid violates term limits set by the Constitution. In Afghanistan, a suicide bomber detonated his explosive-packed car near a security checkpoint in southeastern Afghanistan Sunday evening, killing at least 25 people. The bombing in the coast province also wounded dozens of others, including women and children. It was not immediately clear if the Taliban was behind the attack. It has claimed responsibilities for similar bombings. The manhunt continues for a notorious Mexican drug kingpin who escaped from a maximum security prison for a second time in 14 years. Authorities say Hakim El Chapo Guzman escaped through a hole underneath the showers that led to a tunnel out of the prison. Authorities are questioning 18 prison workers in connection with Guzman's escape. Guzman was first caught last February after being on the run for more than a decade. Yemeni's Houthi rebels and internationally recognized government forces are accusing each other of violating a UN-sponsored humanitarian truce. We have a report from Edward Duranium.
The Saudi-led coalition says it is not bound by the ceasefire that went into effect on Friday. Houthi media report coalition airstrikes hit a military hospital in the capital, Sana'a, a conference center near the city, and homes of Houthi leaders in Sadr. In related developments, Arab media reported that Khalid Baha, vice president of Yemen's Saudi-based internationally recognized government, was meeting to discuss the ongoing conflict with top Egyptian officials Sunday in Cairo. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United States says it strongly condemns the recent al-Shabaab attack on two hotels and an African Union force position in the Somali capital of Mogadishu. At least 16 people were killed in that attack Friday. The militant group has been trying for years to overthrow the Somali government and establish a strict Islamic state. Serbia's Novak Djokovic, the world's number one men's tennis player, celebrating his third Wimbledon title in the past 5 years, defeating Switzerland's Roger Federer in the championship for the second straight year. I'm Michael Brown reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's opposition Frudebu Nyankuri party says it will not take part in next week's presidential election.
It is understandable to postpone elections for 1 week. It is not possible during 1 week to have solved a problem of armed which are disseminated in the country.
Frederick Bamvuga is Frodebu Nyankuri vice president. Uganda's main opposition presidential candidate says there must be political reforms before the 2016 elections. Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party chooses a female vice president candidate. And a finance conference opens today in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
The conference is going to deliver a framework. It's going to look at, you know, various sources of financing all across the board that can actually underpin and support the implementation of the new agenda.
That's Alessandra Casaza of the United Nations Development Program. Vandalism from oil pipelines is on the rise in Nigeria as the new government formulates a policy. And Cameroon girls rescued from human traffickers tell horrific tales of their stay in the Middle East. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's opposition Frudebu Nyankuri party says it will not take part in the country's July 21st presidential election. A decree signed by President Pierre Nkurunziza moved the election from July 15 to July 21st at the request of East African community leaders. But Frudebu's vice president Frederick Bavuga says 1 week is not enough to repatriate the tens of thousands of refugees in neighboring countries, reinstate the independent media, and allow exiled politicians to return to the country in time to take part in the election.
It is understandable to postpone elections for 1 week. It is not possible during 1 week to have solved a problem of armed which are disseminated in the country. The second problem is we have to repatriate people, Burundians, who have fled from Burundi to surrounding countries. The third problem is we have some political leaders who are today outside of our country. And the fourth problem is we do not have private media to give to Burundians information that is given by public media. This is a problem which cannot be solved only during 6 days. It is not possible.
You talk about too many arms in the streets of Bujumbura or in Burundi, but the government said that the opposition is behind some of the violence.
We have never been behind the violence because when we had demonstrators in the Bujumbura capital, everybody knows that it were only peace demonstrators. We know who are behind the violence. We have young people from the ruling party, NDD, FDD, who are behind the violence because they have guns, they have all means to make violence in Burundi.
Now, the East African community has named Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni as the new mediator. Is the opposition, your party, are you ready to be a part of the mediation process of President Museveni?
Yes, we will attend any meeting organized by President Museveni of Uganda. Although he is running his country for 29 years, we will be there to understand what is his message. What we know as the Burundians is that President Yoweri Museveni has attended the meeting where we discussed about the Arusha Peace and Reconciliation Agreement, meaning that we will be there to remind him that, Mr. the President, you know why you have been to Arusha to discuss among Burundians. You will remember what you advised us as Burundians to be reconciled as Burundians between Hutu and between Tutsi. And you say that Tutsis may be protected. And you say that Hutus maybe participate to the power. So if now the problem is that President Nkurunziza want to continue to run the third term, it is not possible because they say that no, everybody who run a country as a president of the republic has not allowed to go beyond the two terms.
Frederick Bamvuga is the vice president of the opposition for Debu Nyakuri Party of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Uganda's main opposition leader and presidential candidate says anyone who believes in democracy must work for reforms in the country's political system that can engender a free and fair election. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change contested in three consecutive presidential elections, 2001, 2006, and 2011. And he said all three were heavily marred by malpractices, including vote rigging. This month, he announced his candidacy to contest the 2016 election. But last Thursday, police arrested Besigye and former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi on what the police call preventive measures. Besigye says he will resume his campaign tomorrow, Tuesday, in spite of the arrest. He said the police have no powers under the Public Order Management Act and old colonial law to stop political parties from holding meetings.
Well, my arrest is a clear, undoubted part of political persecution of political opponents by Mr. Museveni and his regime. It is done in complete violation of our laws. It is an act of impunity on the part of the regime police. And, you know, this is part of the reason why we are struggling to have a new system in our country, a new system of political management in our country. The struggle in Uganda is not just an electoral contest, it's a liberation struggle.
The police said that your arrest and that of Mr. Mbabazi was preventive, meaning that perhaps they had to do that because you were going to, cause trouble or what?
Well, of course, that's what they said. They base themselves that law on which they base such actions is a law that was enacted in 1957 by the British colonial government, and it's a law, therefore, that is meant to repress citizens, that was meant to service the colonial regime, and that is the dilemma that we have. We are supposed to be an independent nation, but being run by colonial institutions and colonial systems.
You have announced you are going to be contesting the 2016 presidential election. What does this arrest do to you? Would that get you to change your mind?
Well, as you may be aware, I have contested in three previous elections, 2001, 2006, and 2011, and all these elections were heavily marred by malpractices, by offenses, by vote rigging and the like. And therefore, in such an election, it's simply not possible to determine who actually has won or who hasn't. And so, in the upcoming elections, we have made it clear that there have to be reforms to the political system that can engender a free and fair election, even if it meant that the election is not held on the time when it is supposed to be held. We are going to be fighting tooth and nail to make sure that there are reforms ahead of the next elections.
Chisa Besigye is the presidential candidate of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change of Uganda. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi Party on Sunday named its candidate in the country's upcoming October 25th presidential and parliamentary elections. He is 55-year-old John Mugufuli, who will most likely succeed President Jakaya Kikwete at the end of his second and final term. Interestingly, Mugufuli has named Samia Suluhu Hassan from the semi-autonomous island of Zanzibar to be his running mate. Ayub Rioba, a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam, says by naming a woman as his running mate, Magufuli is reaffirming his admiration and respect for women's contribution to the Tanzanian society.
Samia Suluhu Hassan is somebody I know. She's been a minister, she's a senior government official who is quite competent. When the nominated presidential candidate, Dr. Magufuli, before he named her, explained how he values the contribution of women in this country, he said when he was elected first to be a deputy minister, his minister was a woman. He talked about how that woman helped him become, you know, a competent person in the government, and after which he was actually nominated to be a full minister in the government of President Jakaya Kikwete.
Samia comes from Zanzibar.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she comes from Zanzibar.
This is in line with the constitution of the country. Is that correct, that the vice president must come from Zanzibar?
Yeah, exactly. If the presidential candidate comes from the mainland, then the vice president has to come from Zanzibar. And if presidential candidate comes from Zanzibar, then the vice president has to come from the mainland.
So what can you tell us about Mr. John Magufuli, the presidential candidate? Who is he?
This is somebody who got into government. You know, first he became a member of parliament, and then he was appointed by President Benjamin Mkapa to be deputy minister, and then he became a full minister. And since he was, you know, appointed as minister, he has actually demonstrated that he is somebody who performs. That's actually what he's known for, a performer.
The way I understand Tanzanian politics is that the picking of Mr. Magufuli and Samia Hassan, this is a foregone conclusion that they probably will be elected president and vice president. Now, what can they do? Because we hear that Tanzania has some economic problems. What are the chances that they can try to do something to revive the country's economy?
Yeah, I think that's a very important question. I think one thing we have to understand is that the previous government, they have tried, actually, to direct the country from the previous socialist policies to, you know, free market economy and attracting investors and trying to strengthen the private sector to make the private sector the engine of the economy. That's what they have all tried to do. And Magufuli has actually worked in those governments that have foreseen these changes take place. But one difference that I think Magufuli and Samia Suluhu are likely to bring, if they actually get elected, is, you know, more serious supervision of the economy and emphasis on good governance, because that's what Magufuli himself has been seen to do in government.
Ayub Rioba is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He was speaking with me from the Tanzanian capital. Heads of state, ministers, and representatives from more than 190 countries are gathering in Ethiopia today, Monday, to decide on a financial framework to realize the new United Nations Development Goals. As Martha Vanderwolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa, trillions of dollars are needed to support the effort.
Starting Monday, around 7,000 delegates will meet at the Financing for Development Conference. After the United Nations Millennium Development Goals expire later this year, the new Sustainable Development Goals will take effect. Alessandra Casassa of the United Nations Development Programme says that this conference will deal with how the post-2015 development agenda can be financed.
The conference is not going to talk about figures. So there's not going to be any new money being put on the table. The conference is going to deliver a framework. It's going to look at, you know, various sources of financing all across the board that can actually underpin and support the implementation of the new agenda.
The Millennium Development Goals, which started in 2000, expire in December. The World Bank released a report in April saying that to finance the post-2015 agenda, trillions of dollars are needed. Besides coming up with a framework, the conference in Ethiopia will discuss different sources of financing that countries will have to tap into to implement the new goals. Kasasa says that the new development agenda cannot be implemented without the finances in place.
We're talking about international public finance, international private finance, domestic public finance, and domestic private finance. Basically, every single dollar, both private and public, will need to be aligned with sustainable development if we want to make it.
Civil society's organizations such as Oxfam International are concerned about the role of the private sector, saying that the corporate grip on development finance must be loosened. Reforming international taxation will be a major point of discussion during the Addis Ababa conference that UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is expected to attend. The new post-2015 development agenda is expected to be adopted during the United Nations General Assembly in September. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Thefts and vandalism from oil pipelines are increasing in Nigeria as the new government formulates a policy to secure the country's oil industry. Chris Stein reports.
Dokbo Asari says he has not been paid since the new government of Muhammadu Buhari took office in May. And so he is withdrawing his services from the pipelines he guards in the Southern Rivers State.
Yes, not a dime was paid. We're still awaiting our trial, our decision. We have consulted with our lawyers.
A spokesman for President Buhari, Femi Adesina, says security contractors like Dokbo Asari withdrew their services. He says it's the responsibility of law enforcement to secure pipelines. Either way, Nigeria's pipelines are increasingly being targeted for theft. According to statistics from the state-owned oil company, 3,700 cases of pipeline vandalism were reported in 2014, an increase of more than 4.5% from the previous year. Vandalism is often the result of thieves siphoning off oil to refine and sell themselves. Dalapo Oni, head of energy research at Ecobank, says thieves have started targeting pipelines in the northern parts of the Niger Delta, as well as outside the commercial capital Lagos, areas which are not protected as well.
That's an area that before wasn't as much of a focus for the oil thieves as it is now.
The vandalism forces companies to shut down production, hurting Nigeria's overall economy, Oni says.
It's not in the amount that is stolen, but in the amount that has to go offline and the impact on the wider economy. The impact on power, impact on the amount of crude oil that can be exported.
And it can be deadly. Italian oil company Eni said on Friday an explosion killed 12 members of a maintenance crew repairing a damaged pipeline in the Niger Delta. The company said the line was damaged by sabotage. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
50 girls allegedly trafficked out of Cameroon to the Middle East to work as domestic servants have been brought back to Cameroon, and they are telling horrific stories of their stay in the Middle East. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited a trauma center in southwest Cameroon and reports that there are loud cries for the government to open investigations.
Some of the girls say they and their families were deceived by TV advertisements claiming there were jobs in Kuwait for house helpers, nurses, and airport workers. 27-year-old Claudette Amike, who spent a year in Kuwait, says while there, she was treated as a slave.
I go to bed at 1 a.m. And there is no food, strength. I told them I don't want to work again. They should send me back to my country. This woman said, I'm going away. I have come to work. I must work. I went down on my knees. Nobody to talk to. I cried to God for help. I prayed and cried.
Cameroon's Institute of Statistics reports a 30% unemployment rate and a 60% underemployment rate in the country, figures that lead many Cameroonians to seek jobs in Arab states. After attempts to get an interview with the middlemen who facilitate overseas employment failed, I pretended to be someone whose sister wanted to travel. Then, agent Ngala Timothy described the process.
We have Kuwait for women at 250,000. You just pay 250,000 and we help you to get your visa and everything. So what you need to give us is your passport and you give us two site photos and HIV test and physical fit. They don't go there and they start looking for jobs. We get them an employment visa from Cameroon, so as they are going there, they go and they start working immediately.
Beatrice Titanji, who runs the trauma center where the girls are recovering, says the middlemen also collect an advance salary of $3,000 from those who require services of the girls in the Middle East and do not give the money to the girls.
As an organization, we expect that the government should follow them up and really have them prosecuted, because what they are doing is slavery in the 21st century. Our girls, our boys, our women, our children are actually suffering. You will not be surprised to find elderly women who have retired who think they could do better there as house helps.
There have been outcries for Cameroon to investigate and prosecute suspects. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Limbe, southwestern Cameroon.
Stand up for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Oldman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the World Student Games in Gwangju, South Korea. Ugandan Dorcas Ajok clocked 4 minutes and 18.53 seconds to win women's 1500 meters and claim Africa's only gold medal on the final day of the athletics competition on Sunday. Morocco's Abdelati El Gouch and Zuhair Talbi won silver medals in 800 meters and 5000 meters respectively. South Africans bagged bronze medals through Reynard van Rensburg in 800 meters, Rudolf Pinar in long jump, the men's half marathon team, and men's 4x100 meter relay. Earlier on Friday, Ivory Coast's Winfred Hua Kofi and South African Justin Palfreman won men's 200 meters and women's 400 meters respectively. Botswana's Liamane Maotanong, Algeria's Abdel Malik Lahlouliou, and Morocco's Abdel Ali Raisin each won silver medals in men's 400 meters, 400 meter hurdles, and 1500 meters respectively. Still in Gwangju, Ivory Coast bagged two medals in Taekwondo. Ruth Bagby won a bronze medal in women's 62 kilogram category on Sunday, while Cisse Sala clinched a silver medal in men's 80 kilogram division. Turning to rugby, hosts Uganda outplayed Botswana 59-10 at the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1B Africa Cup in Kampala on Saturday. Ivory Coast edged Senegal 22-19 as Madagascar beat Mauritius 33-24. In football, Russia beat African champions Madagascar 4-2 at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Espino, Portugal on Sunday. Earlier on Friday, Tahiti pipped Madagascar 4-3. On Saturday, Senegal edged hosts Portugal 6-5. And today, Monday, Senegal play Japan. Meanwhile, Sudan's El Hilal beat Egypt's Smouha 2-0 in a mini-league tie in the Orange Africa Champions League on Sunday. In an Algerian showdown, defending champions Entente Setif pipped Mouloudia El Ulma 1-0 as Algeria's USM Algiers beat Sudan's El Merrekh 1-0. Elsewhere, Egyptian defending champions El Ahly and Mali's Stade Malien drew 0-0 in their Orange Africa Confederations Cup mini-league tie on Sunday. In a Tunisian duel, Etoile du Sahel pipped Esperance 1-0. Egypt's Zamalek edged South Africa's Orlando Pirates 2-1, and the Republic of Congo's AC Leopards pipped Tunisia's CS Faxien 1-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States says it strongly condemns the recent Al-Shabaab attack on two hotels and an African Union force position in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. That is it for this Monday, July 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you make this week a very productive one.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing bribery, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama soon makes his last trip to Africa as president. He will attend the Global Entrepreneurial Summit in his ancestral homeland, Kenya. He will also travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, will join him. and she will be Shaka Sali's guest next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. 18:30